What a pleasure it is to have Gretchen Rubin on the podcast today. Gretchen is one of the most influential writers on human nature. Her books, such as the blockbuster bestsellers The Happiness Project and Better Than Before, have sold almost 3 million copies in 30 languages. She also hosts a popular award-winning podcast, Happier with Gretchen Rubin. And in this podcast today, we're going to talk about her book, The Four Tendencies, and how those relate to getting your home organized both for you and the four tendencies of those people that are in the home that you live with. Enjoy our conversation today. Welcome to the Organize 365 podcast. I'm your host, professional organizer, productivity expert, and motivational speaker, Lisa Woodruff. This podcast will help you embrace progress over perfection and create lasting functional organizing in your home. I have so much to share with you, so let's get started. Gretchen, thank you so much for joining us on the Organize 365 podcast.
I'm so happy to be talking to you.
This is so much fun. I have to tell you that I don't do very many interviews on the podcast. And for almost a year, I keep getting these emails from my audience saying, please interview Gretchen. I really want to know how the four tendencies go along with organizing your house. Like, I know that the two of you will have a great conversation, and I have to hear the two of you together.
Excellent. Good. Well, these are two of my favorite subjects. So I've been so looking forward to this.
Yes. So I want to, I'm not very detail oriented, and I'm always worried that I'm going to get the details wrong. So I would love it if you would explain for any of my audience members who have not heard about the four tendencies, in a nutshell, what are the four tendencies?
Right. Now, most people can tell what they are if they're an upholder, a questioner, an obliger, or a rebel, just from the brief description that I'm going to give right now. But if there's anybody who wants to take a quiz, like 1.3 million people have taken my quiz, they can just go to my website, GretchenRubin.com, and take it for free. But like I said, most people don't even really need to. So what this looks at is your response to expectations. And we all face two kinds of expectations: outer expectations, like a work deadline or request from a friend, and we face inner expectations, our own desire to clean out the garage, our own desire to keep a New Year's resolution. So upholders readily meet outer and inner expectation. They meet the work deadline, they keep the New Year's resolution without much fuss. They want to know what other people expect from them, but their expectations for themselves are just as important. Then there are questioners. Questioners question all expectations. They'll do something if they're convinced it makes sense. So they make everything an inner expectation. If it meets their inner standard, they'll do it. If it doesn't, they will push back. They typically object to anything arbitrary, inefficient, irrational. Then there are obligers. Obligers readily meet outer expectations, but they struggle to meet inner expectations. So they have no trouble meeting the work deadline, but when they're keeping the New Year's resolution, they struggle. And I saw this tendency for the first time when a friend of mine said, I don't understand it. When I was in high school, I was on the track team and I never missed track practice. So why can't I go running now? Well, when she had a team and a coach expecting her to show up, no problem. When she was just trying to go on her own, it was a challenge. And then finally, rebels. Rebels resist all expectations, outer and inner alike. They want to do what they want to do in their own way, in their own time. They can do anything they want to do. They can do anything they choose to do. But if you ask or tell them to do something, they're very likely to resist. So these are the four tendencies in a nutshell.
And you are an upholder, correct?
I am. I'm an upholder, which is a small tendency. It turns out obliger is the largest tendency for both men and women. And after that, questioner, rebel is smallest, but upholder is only slightly larger. So I'm part of kind of an extreme fringe personality type. Now, how about you? What do you know your tendency?
Well, my audience had me pegged as an upholder. Ooh. Like they were like, for sure, we know you're an upholder. You're an upholder. You're an upholder.
Oh, there you go.
I have both your audiobook and your regular book. And so I listened to your audiobook and I'm analyzing all of my family members. I'm analyzing myself, which one is which. And I'm like, I don't know if I'm totally an upholder. I think I'm a questioner. So I'm one of the 1.3 million people who took your survey and I'm a questioner. Yes. And
because you can do it, but because upholders and questioners can look alike because if questioners decide something's the right thing to do, they'll follow it, no yes. problem, just like an upholder. But they're always asking, well, why should I? Whereas for upholders, it's much more that they're much more likely to meet outer expectations without needing a lot of justification. So you think you're more of a questioner.
Oh, I know I am. And I think part of it is I'm self-employed. I don't do well employed for other people. So I think I get to pick what I want to do, but I'm very good at holding myself to my own tasks, meeting my own deadlines. And then in talking about home organization, I'm constantly questioning, well, why do we organize the kitchen that way? Do we need it for all different generations, all different sexes, all different parts in the world? And so some of the things you said about questioners that made me realize I was a questioner and not an upholder before I took the test was that questioners love spreadsheets and they love to customize things. I'm always taking whatever the program is, but I want to tweak it my way or add my colors or add my own thing to it.
Well, this is a good example that we can't always judge someone's tendency from the outside. Like you may think it's very obvious to you what someone's tendency is. You really have to understand the way they think. And so, so from the outside, people might say, oh, she's an upholder because it's so easy for her to stick to rules. But you're like, only the rules that I think make sense. I'm
my
resisting
rules.
It. Good. There you go. Questioner. Excellent.
Yeah. And, you know, audiences, you now listen to podcasts going forward or start going backwards, you'll realize, oh, she's constantly questioning the status quo or questioning what we're doing or analyzing and then explaining. But like you said, the largest group is obliger. And so my audience was saying to me, hello, we are obligers. Do you know what obligers are? We're obligers. Can you please help us follow your programs? And that's when I realized buying the program, signing up for the 100-day program, being in the Facebook group, having the daily email, all of those things help them get the project done because there was that outer, my emailing them every single morning, here's your task of the day, here's your task of the day.
No, and sometimes it's interesting because sometimes for upholders and questioners, they don't understand why others might need accountability because they're sort of like, well, if it makes sense to you, just do it. Like, you know, but that just doesn't work for everybody. So yeah, you're right. You want to set things up so that everybody finds what they need in order to succeed because what works for one person might not be what works for someone else.
And what's so interesting is because I had listened to your book, we set up this interview, the audience had said, we really need a lot of accountability. I have this very simple paper organization system called the Sunday basket. You put all the mail in there and you go through it on Sunday. That's the gist of the whole entire system. It has folders and I've created all these things that go with it, but basically save all your mail till Sunday, go through it all using this system. Works really well for me. So my obliger audience is saying to me, we need you to go through the Sunday basket with us on Sunday.
Oh, yeah. Right. Because it's not enough that it's just there.
And now I am knowing, because I'm a questioner, now I know, oh my gosh, there's this need out here. They literally need me to go through the basket with them on Sunday. There's no way I can. Like, I cannot go through the basket with them on Sunday. I thought, well, there has to be a solution. And that's why I created the Sunday Basket Club. I thought, well, I can't do it, but they definitely need it. How do I do this? And I found two people in our certification program that actually physically go through the Sunday basket every single Sunday on Zoom in this Facebook group with this group so that they can have that accountability that they need as obligers.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, I think it's hard from the perspective of your own tendency to understand what other people need or want or resist. I think it's really helpful to keep that in mind because you don't want to accidentally get in someone's way or drive them nuts. Totally without meaning to, just because you don't understand that to their tendency. You know, like one of the things as upholders and questioners, you know, it's sort of like, well, make, if you, you know, if it works for you, make a to-do list, put it on the calendar, like what's most important, do that first. But, you know, rebels often will resist a to-do list. For them, it makes them, the minute it's on the to-do list, they don't want to do it. So it's like, how can they harness the power of the to-do list, which many of them acknowledge, even though it doesn't work for them? It's like, okay, well, you can figure out ways to work around that using your rebel tendency. Once you understand, you might not be able to use a to-do list the way other people use a to-do list because it's like inspiring that spirit of resistance for you. So how do you do it from the rebel perspective? But just saying to somebody like, you're wrong, I'm right, you have no self-control, you're lazy, or I lack self-control, I'm lazy, what's wrong with me that I can't do it? It's like, yeah, a lot of people have the same issue that you do. Let's just figure out how to work around it. It's not a big deal.
And I think because I'm a questioner and a teacher, like that's what I went to college for, I'm constantly, I understand that the point of teaching is that the learner learns, like that they get accomplished what their goal is. So if they are not learning or they're not accomplishing their goal, then I, as the teacher, am failing in teaching. You can't fail to learn. You can only fail to teach. And so I need to teach to all modalities. And this is like a whole new way of looking at the modalities. You know, we have kinesthetic learners, you know, as you look at as a teacher. This is another way of looking at your classroom too and your adult learner. What are their motivations in learning whatever you're teaching? Because they're obviously listening to the podcast. They want to learn it.
Right. Well, it's interesting that you say that, and it's good that you appreciate that as a questioner, because in my observation, questioners often really emphasize kind of inner desire, inner priorities, inner motivation. And they're like, if you would just get clear in your own mind what you need to succeed or what you want, then your actions will follow. That is not the case. That works really well for questioners, but other people need to do it in a different way and think about it in a different way. But questioners, like, they constantly think, like, if you only understood your own inner expectations, that's what's going to inspire action. I'm like,
I do teach a lot of that.
But see, it just it's not effective for a lot of people. Especially obligers, that doesn't work. And rebels kind of need to think about it more like identity. It's not like, it's more like, well, what kind of person are you? Like, you know, what do you want to put out into the world? This is the kind of person that you are. It's not like, oh, this is what you, it's not, they can get anything they want, anything they choose. But for them, it's much more about like being who they are. That's a deep, deep value for rebels. Mm-hmm. And they just think of it in a kind of a slightly different way from the other tendencies.
And I think in our family of four, we have all four of these tendencies.
Ooh, interesting.
I know.
And that's rare.
It is rare. And I know that you say that a lot of children appear to be rebels, but I know I have one that truly is a rebel, but in a good way. Like it can be a good thing. It's not necessarily a bad thing. So you have a lot of, I mean, obviously you've been thinking about this for more than the few minutes we've been on the podcast. How would you, you're talking to almost all women here, who are trying to get their homes organized, their homes, their papers organized. Basically, let's get some of this stuff done. So we have, I always say, so you have more time to go out and live your best life and do what you were uniquely created to do.
Right.
How can we get our homes organized? Mm. Both, one, by our own tendencies, especially obligers who are always trying to oblige the family and, you know, oh, I'm going to take time and money for me to get the house organized for myself. That's a big issue they have, number one. And then also, they've got all these people in their family. Like, how do we get them going?
Yeah. Now, so there's one thing that's very interesting about, there's a couple things that's interesting to note about obligers. And I think it's worth talking about obligers at a little bit extra length because it is the biggest tendency. You either are an obliger or you have many obligers in your life. I mean, probably a lot of people who are attracted to your podcast are obligers who are looking, who are like frustrated with themselves. They're like, I really want to have a neat, organized house. Why don't I? You know, it's like, if you're an upholder, that's probably not as big a problem. So I would think that you would probably have quite a number of obligers in your audience. So one thing to think about with obligers is they often feel like they can't delegate certain tasks.
Yes.
And it's almost mysterious. Yeah. It's like, why can't you delegate this? And it's like, that just isn't right. And you're like, okay, you really want to push back on that feeling because, and this is where people around you can be helpful. Like somebody could say to you, you know you feel like you really need to cook Thanksgiving dinner yourself, but when you're busy cooking, you don't have time to spend with your extended family who don't get to see you that often. You're rattled, you're overwhelmed, you're cranky, you're preoccupied. We want you sitting in the living room with us, talking, laughing. We need to bring somebody in who can do that work because what's really important about the holiday is that we're all spending time together. I'm going to call the caterer. I'm going to arrange this and you're really going to hurt my feelings if you turn it down. Okay, now that as to an obliger is like, I'm meeting my expectations for other people. I'm going to hurt somebody's feelings if I disrupt this plan. I'm serving a greater good. Just saying to somebody like, you don't need to do it. Well, if you want to cook dinner, but I'm not going to help you because I mean, I'm happy to pay for somebody to cater it. Like that's just going to enrage an obliger.
Yes, yes.
So you might say like, well, as my gift to you, I would like to give this to you, but then there's other ways to set it up. So like, you might think of your duty to be a role model for other people. If you want your children to be neat and tidy, you need to model that behavior. So you're going to do it because of your need to be a good role model. Or I was said, I remember I was in a book signing line and this woman came up and she's like, I have this really messy guest room and I don't know how to clean it up. And, you know, and then her mother like leaned over and was like, it's totally wrecked, blah, blah, blah. What are we going to do? And they thought there was going to be this long answer. And I said, invite somebody for the weekend.
Yes.
Right? Like, done. It's going to get clean. Because what are you going to do? That you have to get it clean. So have a party. You know, like if you want to clean out the garage, say to your spouse, hey, honey, on Tuesday morning, you're going to be able to park your car in the garage. And it's like, have them hold you accountable to that and be like honking the horn out there on Tuesday morning. You really need to build in accountability. And, you know, sometimes like using a professional organizer is also a way to build in accountability because you're like, well, this person's coming over. I can't waste their time and my time. I have to do the preparation. I have to follow through with this person. But again, maybe I need to make this investment. I need to do this because I want to create an environment for other people in my family. Like, it's not just about me. It's about having an environment for everyone. It's going to be easier to keep clean. We're not going to lose things as much. Our stress level is going to go down. We're going to know where everything is. Like, it's just going to be a much more pleasant environment. And it's not just like, this is what you want. See, for a rebel, that is the message. This is what you want. This is what you choose. This person's working for you. For an obliger, it's like, this is going to help others as well. This isn't just for you. This is about other people. Now, I've heard of people doing cool, crazy things, which is like two sisters-in-law were like, okay, I'm going to clean out my house, and you're going to clean out your house. And if you clean your house, I get a massage. And if I clean my house, you get a massage. So if I don't clean my house, you don't get your massage. It's because if it's just me not getting my massage, I might not do it. But am I going to let my sister-in-law not get her 90-minute massage that she's been looking forward to? No, I'm going to follow through with that. So there's different ways to create outer accountability because for obligers, that's probably what is happening. Now, here's another thing about obligers. Mm-hmm. Obligers sometimes have obliger rebellion.
And that's when I knew I had an obliger in my family because I recognized the obliger rebellion. I was like, you are my obliger.
Oh, I want to hear. Yes. Okay, so let me explain what it is and then tell us about your obliger rebellion because it's such a fascinating phenomenon. Mm-hmm. So obligers will meet expectations and then suddenly they snap and they say, this I will not do. And sometimes it's small and funny, like I'm just not going to answer your emails for 2 weeks. And sometimes it's things like I'm going to end a 30-year friendship. I'm going to get a divorce. Yeah. I'm going to quit my job overnight and go work for a competitor because you're dead to me. This is over. I've had it. And it happens when obligers feel neglected or exploited or taken advantage of, ignored, or when expectations are just too high. And then they kind of just go on strike. And sometimes it's meant to be helpful. It's meant to save the obligers from an unsustainable situation, but it can often be quite destructive. And also to the people around an obliger, it can seem disproportionate. It's like, well, it's out of the blue, it's explosive. And it's also like, well, if you didn't want to serve on that committee, why did you agree to serve on that committee? Or if you didn't want to cook Thanksgiving dinner, why did you say that we couldn't go out to a restaurant? I mean, people are like, what? You're not making sense. Once you understand the obliger perspective, it's much, much clearer.
Oh, yes.
But you want to watch out for this. I've heard from so many people who are like, well, my kids complained about what I cooked for dinner. So then I'm like, okay, I'm not cooking dinner for a month. Now, that could be good in a specific situation. Right. That could be very beneficial and your kids would learn a valuable lesson, which is like, hey kids, frozen pizza gets old. But sometimes it can be more destructive. Like, I'm just not going to get out of bed for 2 weeks. That's not uncommon for an obliger. And there can be a lot of negative repercussions. Let's hear, what's your example of obliger rebellion?
I don't have an example. I could see where it gets right to the bubbling point and then we avoid it. And I see a couple big things coming in the future that I may not be able to avoid for this person. But what I find both in obliger rebellion and the other question I have about obligers is that it seems to me sometimes that obligers don't really know what they want.
No. Yes.
Like, and you can't help them get to what they want.
Well, I think what you can do, though, is to really take them through the process and encourage them to think through for themselves what they want, because I think you're exactly right. They're so busy thinking, like, well, what does everybody else expect from me?
Right.
They don't even take the time to articulate for themselves. Because the thing is, they can meet inner expectations by putting in outer accountability. If you want to read more, join a book group. If you want to exercise more, work out with a trainer. But you have to know that you want to read more. You have to know that you want to exercise. And so you really do, and I think this is where managers and family members and friends can really help someone by saying, like, but let's think about, well, what do you really want? I mean, okay, yeah, you're doing all this work for the PTA, But really, what is it that you want to get out of it? Is it mm-hmm. you want to learn more about the school? Do you want to make friends among the other parents? Is it to show your child that you value school? Like, what do you want? And then let's figure out how you can get what you want without being overloaded by everybody else's expectations. Because sure, you're going to do some things, but you don't have to do everything. And how do you do the things that are going to get you where you want? I can play as your confidant. I can help you dial into that, because I think you're exactly right. Sometimes obligers have lost touch with even what they would want. And the fact is, if you don't know what you want, that's a difficult situation. A boss could say, like, you know, where are you going? And that might be a process of really helping someone mm-hmm. articulate those aims. And certainly with a child, with an obliger child, there's always a risk that they're just like, I'm doing football because my dad wants me to do football. Right. I'm doing debate because my big brother did debate. I'm getting A's because my teacher says I have to have A's. And it's like, but hey, honey, what do you want to be doing? Like, maybe you want to teach the dog some tricks. Maybe you want to learn to do magic. Maybe you want to take piano. Maybe you want to take a painting class. Maybe you just want to like lie outside in the backyard and look at clouds. But we need to but what is it that you want for yourself? And then how can I create a structure that's going to help you meet your own aims? Because that is, you know, an extra step for obligers. But you're absolutely right. That's like a crucially important point to emphasize.
Yeah, well, if you have any more resources on this or specific podcast episodes that you've recorded, you have a podcast as well, the Happier with Gretchen Rubin podcast. I have listened to, many of my audience have listened to, this idea of what do you want, obligers? Yeah. I think it's going to be coming up a lot more in the Organized 365 podcast, because I've recorded so many podcasts. All the rooms of the house can be organized with the podcast. We have the 100-day program. We have the Sunday Basket podcast. Home and paper is getting organized. So we're to the point in the podcast where I say to you, great, you're getting organized. Now what?
Right.
Because that's what took all your time, was the laundry and the dishes and the organization and the chaos. And I look around, our kids are 16 and 18. We'll have one in college next year. We went out to dinner the other night. And last night I almost started crying, and I'm not a crier. And I was like, you know what? When he goes to school, he's probably not coming back. I know when I went to school, I didn't come back. I was like, what's our relationship going to look like going forward? How often will I see him? What will we do? And, you know, in a few short years, it could just be Craig and I at home. And then what are we going to do? Right. What do we want to do?
Right. Right.
How are we going to fill this time? We spend so much time raising our children, driving them everywhere, doing all the laundries, doing all the dishes. And then I could tell now there's going to be this boop. And all of it goes away. Like, you go from 40 hours a week of doing work for them to zero.
Right. I mean, of everything that I've ever written in my whole life, this little 1-minute video that I did called the phrase is the days are long, but the years are short.
Yes.
Because the years are short. And it's interesting because on my podcast, my daughter just went away. She's in her freshman year of college now. And I asked listeners, what's your advice? Because this mm-hmm. is a big family milestone for her and for me and for her whole family, for my daughter, who's the one child left behind, for my dog, where's Eliza? And people gave me so much valuable information, because it is a big family milestone. But I will say this, there's less clutter to organize when a kid
moves
to college.
I'm
like, our medicine cabinet, because we share a bathroom with our daughter, it's like, oh my gosh, we have so much room in our medicine cabinet now that all those like face masks and weird, you know, hair products that she used like went away with her. But you're right, it's a huge milestone. And it really does give you an opportunity to say, like, well, what do you want your life to be like? What are you going to do with that time? And just even being more organized, it frees up a lot of time. That's the beauty of it. It's like, you just, everything's more efficient. You spend a lot less time fussing with things. What are you going to do with that time? You want to use it. You don't want to just like spend it on Facebook, you know, three times as much time on Facebook. It's not going to move the needle much for you. You need to think like, well, what would I do with that time that would really boost my happiness?
And I think that's the big thing. When people finally put the effort into losing the weight, paying off the debt, or getting organized, those are the three biggies, then you're no longer overweight, you're no longer in debt, and you're organized. Now what?
Yeah.
Because, you know, Dr. Phil always used to say, you know, you get an identity from being in debt or being cluttered or being whatever. And when you take that away, you have a new identity, and then you need to really press into that. I think there is something about once you become organized, you are living a different kind of life.
Yeah.
And sometimes you're kind of surprised, what am I going to do with this time? Especially, I think, for the obligers who are used to meeting those outer expectations. If that laundry and the dishes and all that goes away, then the inner expectations need to come out. What are they?
Yeah, right. Exactly. And that's when you really can say, like, well, if I do want to exercise, how can I create the outer accountability that's going to let me make that part of my day? Or if I do want to eat more healthfully or quit sugar or practice piano or work on a novel or practice meditation or spend more time in nature or whatever, you know, whatever it might be, it's like, okay, yeah, what is it that you would do? It's interesting though that you point to identity, because my previous book was called Better Than Before, and it's all about the 21 strategies that we can use to make or break our habits. And one thing that I didn't understand for a long time was the critical importance of identity and how often our habits are tied to our identity. Like a friend of mine who's like, but I'm Italian, I love fine wine, and I love food, and I love, you know, hospitality, and I'm the one that says, fill your glass again. But she wanted to drink less. She didn't want to give up drinking, but she wanted to drink less. And I said to her, finally, like, it took me a long time to understand, this is part of your identity as an Italian. You need to think about, how can you be Italian with everything that means to you, and let go of the drinking? Because this need to feel like, well, I always am like, have another glass of wine, that's interfering with other important values in your life. So how can you both be the Italian that you want to be and that you are, and also drink the amount that's appropriate to like what you feel like is serving you best in your life? But you had to grapple with it. Or like a friend of mine who's like, you know, I'm like a sophisticated urban type, I'm a real New York City person. But then she had a baby and she really should go to bed at like 8:30 PM, you know? Yeah. And she was like, well, no, I'm the kind of person, I would never go to bed before midnight at the earliest. And I'm like, yeah, you got to get over that because there's no room for that now. And she had to kind of wrestle with the, like saying, okay, now that I have this baby, I have to change this part of my identity, which is very tied to the idea of being a night owl. And then it's like, and then sometimes your identity can come back, or maybe it needs to change, but it took me a long time to really understand how fundamental this idea of identity is, or the idea like all creative people are messy. So if I'm not messy, does that mean that I'm not creative? It's like, well, some creative people are messy, but some creative people are like, you know, fanatically neat. So you can be creative any way you want. But if you're neater, you probably find your keys faster.
And I think that idea of habits also, we don't realize how much of our life is habitual. You create habits, you almost aren't even in control. You've programmed yourself with these habits, and then you run the program that's in your head, which is why in my podcast and your podcast, I know you do the same thing, that's why I ask you so many questions. Like, think about time versus money. Think about how you're doing this so that you can then make a choice. Yeah. Do I want to keep that habit I already have, or do I want to do the work of changing it? Changing habits is not easy.
No, it's not. But you're right. It's like 40% of everyday life is shaped by habits. Mm-hmm. So if we have habits that work for us, we're much more likely to be happy, healthier, more productive, and more creative. And it's funny too, how like what I've noticed is like a lot of times people come up with a solution where you're like, I didn't see that solution coming. Like, I remember I talked to these people and they had spent all this time and money in marriage counseling and, you know, fighting, conflict, they couldn't resolve it. And then finally they're like, you know what? We're going to take the money that we're spending on marriage counseling and hire a house cleaner. Problem solved. Because all their conflict was about laundry, socks, dishes, all this stuff. And it's like, okay, well, you're spending the money. It's not like you've got the money to spend because you're spending, and you've decided, like, clearly, like, your marriage is a high value to you, which rightly so, it's a very important life relationship. But it's like, okay, there's an easier way to spend this money. And so let's do that. And I was like, that's you don't always have to work towards a solution like that. Sometimes you're just like, let's just evade the problem. Yeah. Or, you know, same thing with like the guest room. It's like, you can try to work yourself up into a frenzy of motivation, or you can just be like, well, I'm having my parents come to stay, so I really don't have a choice, because otherwise they're going to be sleeping in a blow up mattress underneath the dining room table, you know? And it's like, okay.
All right. I want to have a different discussion with you. One I don't think you've ever had on any other podcast. Mm. I have really, really researched generations. So there's this book by Neil Strauss and William Howe called Generations. It's this big old thick book. It's not available on Audible. Mm. And it traces back all of the generations all the way back to, I think, the 1600s in the United States, just United States generations. And there are four primary generations. So right now they would be millennials, Gen X, baby boomers, and then the silent generation. And then the youngest kids who are 16 and under are the Gen Z. Mm-hmm. And each of these generations, the silent generation and Gen Z, are matching generations. So they have similar tendencies. And each generation has its own characteristics. There are dominant and recessive generations, and they all have a different flavor to them. Have you, in any of your thoughts about these four tendencies, matched different tendencies more or less than to each generation?
Well, I'm really a big believer in the genetic roots of personality. And so I don't think that your tendency would be a result of your generation. Now, it's definitely true that at different times and in different cultures, there is a value given to each tendency. So, or in a different, you know, different places. Mm-hmm. So if you're a questioner in North Korea, you're going to learn to keep your mouth shut.
Problem.
If you're a questioner in Silicon Valley, that might be like best possible outcome for, yeah. And so I think like at certain points, like you might say like, well, the 60s or 70s, that might have been a real rebel time when it was really like question authority, like and a willingness to flout authority might have really been sort of like lauded, or it might have been a subject of great interest in the culture, whereas at another time that might not have been true. But I don't think whether you individually are a questioner, I don't think that's a function of your generation, because I think it's genetically determined. So I don't think it could be affected by something like that. It could be affected in how it expressed itself.
Okay.
But your fundamental tendency wouldn't change.
So, and are the fundamental tendencies, you know, the four fundamental tendencies that have, you know, the smallest is the rebel, the biggest is the obliger. Is that true in all generations?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. Because it's genetically determined. Yeah. Yeah.
It's genetically determined.
Yeah. Genetics isn't interested in, I mean, except for the very long game.
We talk about that epigenetics.
That evolution, that evolution plays, right, yeah. Well, that's true. Like, if you're very stressed out, that would be actually fascinating. If we had the big data.
I'm a questioner, let's do it.
If you had mothers living, like expectant mothers living during wartime, were they more likely to have children who are a certain tendency because of some kind of epigenetic environment? Because certainly we know that women who are very stressed when they're pregnant will have children who are more prone to anxiety, say. They're like more vigilant. Because they're being born into a dangerous world. So it could be, but that's like way beyond the scope of the kind of thing that I can do.
I'll do that research.
We need big data. Yeah. Get big data.
Well, that's interesting. Okay. So I was thinking like millennials, you know, they are very questioning, and we clearly are going through a lot of changes right now. We're leaving the Industrial Revolution and moving into whatever they're going to call the next thing. You're going to need a lot of, well, I guess questioner, the four tendencies are really about how you meet things, not about how you perceive the world then. So I guess I'm wrong about that. I'm thinking about there needs to be a lot of big questions answered right now, about a lot of big questions are being asked, looking at situations from the outside in and completely changing industries is happening.
Yeah,
that's not tendency related.
That is not tendency. That's just that's a philosophy of
okay.
Well, the question is, if I ask you to do something, do you say to me, why should I? That's what questioners do.
Yeah, I kind of do.
Yeah. See, I wouldn't. I'd be like, okay, you know.
Gretchen, thank you so much for being on the Organized 365 podcast. It has been a pleasure.
Oh, it's such a joy to talk to you. Thanks so much.
Thank you. Bye.